When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Donald Trump was back in court today for his New York hush money trial, and in a twist no one saw coming, he remained conscious. Which means he was bright-eyed and a bushy-tail this morning when Judge Merchan held him in contempt of court for violating his gag order again. Again? I've got deja woo-hoo. This morning, he was found, he was fined $1,000 for disparaging remarks about the jurors he made on a right-wing network, saying that they were mostly all Democrat and had been picked so fast. Very unfair. Plus, no jury is supposed to be of my peers, but I can tell you, from what I can tell, they all love their children, and none of them tagged a porn star at a celebrity golf event featuring Ray Romano. Ray Romano, everyone loves him, except the porn star who was busy loving me. This means Trump has violated his gag order for the 10th time. One more, and the judge says the court will have to consider a jail sanction. Wow. Jail. That. Wow. Donald Trump could go to Rikers Island. My condolences to whichever prison guard has to conduct the cavity search. Wear a headlamp. In his contempt ruling, Merchan recognized the historic nature of this dilemma, telling Trump he didn't want to put him in jail because, quote, you are a former president of the United States and possibly the next one as well. Yes, no president has ever served jail time, although Grover Cleveland did spend some time in witness protection as Grover Cincinnati. Now, today, to explain how Trump reimbursed Michael Cohen for paying off Stormy Daniels in 2016, the prosecution called a new witness, former Trump org corporate controller, and Geppetto, realizing he just stepped on that singing cricket, Jeff McConney. At the Trump org, McConney was tasked with getting Michael Cohen paid back for the hush money, and he confirmed that the checks to Cohen came from Trump's personal bank account. Oh. Personal handwritten checks. That's an amateur move. Should have used Zelle. You know their tagline, Zelle. I think it's like Venmo with more buttons. McConney is an expert witness because his time at the Trump org dates back to 1987. In fact, McConney's son, Justin, was the person who basically ran Trump's Twitter feed before Trump learned how to do it himself. Something Justin described as, quote, like the moment the dinosaurs learned to open doors in Jurassic Park. Yes, and is this true? I'm being... Do we have this? I'm being told we have footage of the moment Trump staff learned he was doing his own tweets.
Hold on to your butts.
Donald Trump isn't always in court. Sometimes he's out shaking his moneymaker to pay his legal bills, and that's what he did at Mar-a-Lago just this weekend. At an event on Saturday, donors reportedly paid at least $40,000 to attend. But according to leaked audio, Trump complained about having to take so many pictures with donors and told people in the crowd that if they didn't get a picture, it was because they didn't give enough money. Hey, donors, I don't want no scrub. A scrub is a guy who won't get no pick with me. Hanging by the big shrimp tray at the lunch buffet, waving a dollar at me. Hey. Thank you. Thank you. Next up, I'm going to do waterfalls. I'm going to do unpretty. Trump went on to say that a nearby wedding at Mar-a-Lago was getting better treatment because the wedding was paying more per person to be there. There's a wedding that costs more than $40,000 a plate. I assume the food options are chicken, fish, or the most dangerous game. At the same event, Trump paraded some of his potential VP picks on stage, making mostly good comments about them, but also remarks about what he views as their weaknesses. He's picking his vice president bachelor style. I really enjoyed our one-on-one time in the fantasy Oval Office, Marco Rubio. Will you accept this news? Speaking of... Really? Well, speaking of Marco Rubio, both he and Trump are Florida residents, and the Constitution says that either the president or the vice president must be from a different state as the electors, leading Trump to say that Rubio has a minor Florida problem. Yes. A minor Florida problem, also what you call it when you have unprotected sex with the poolside DJ at the Tampa Bay Hilton. About a week later, you have a minor Florida problem. Trump also brought out Utah Senator and business casual Gerber baby Mike Lee and gave him this ringing endorsement. I love your haircut. Talk about damning with faint praise. Marco, very talented. Tim Scott, fantastic campaigner. Mike, hair. At one point, Trump introduced Florida representative and co-worker responding to rumors that there's cake in the break room, Byron Donalds. Donalds is a rising star in the GOP, or as Trump said, somebody who's created something very special politically. I like diversity. Diversité, as you would say.
Wow. Wow.
As who would say? No one in this country. One attendee was South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, seen here about to take her dog for a walk. When he introduced her, Trump did not mention that she had killed her dog, Cricket, like a dog. But no one can see her and not think about that story now. Her memoir isn't even out yet, but excerpts from the book being released don't make her look less like Cruella de Vil. In a later chapter, Noem references President Biden's German Shepherd commander, who has a history of biting Secret Service agents, writing, "What would I do if I was president on the first day in office in 2025? Thanks for asking. I happen to have a list. The first thing I do is make sure Joe Biden's dog was nowhere on the grounds. Commander, say hello to Cricket for me." That's your if I was president fantasy? What happens if she finds a genie's lamp? Three wishes, kill a dog, and I guess time machine so I could go back and kill Hitler's dog. Noem's book. Noem's book isn't just horrifying truths. It's also got some strange lies in it. When talking about her foreign policy experience, Noem writes, "I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I'd been a children's pastor, after all." No, that actually helps. I know, because I taught Sunday school for 3 years, and that's why I was able to give a purple nurple to Muammar Gaddafi. Turns out, that very believable story about her staring down Kim Jong-un is not true. And Noem was confronted about that yesterday by Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation.
Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes.
Yes. Yes, that's why her book, No Going Back, is now called Going Back and Making Some Changes.
I don't want on no skirts, girls like you can get no love from me. Passenger.
Turning to business news, this network is for sale if anyone's feeling shoppy. After recent exclusive negotiations expired, Paramount Global's sale process is now wide open. That's right. One lucky buyer could get all the Paramount properties, the FBIs, the CSIs, Blue Bloods, the Sheldons, old and young. All could be yours if the price is right. Oh, you also get the price is right. But... but act fast, because as of this weekend, Sony is in talks to acquire Paramount. The deal's not a sure thing yet, but Sony is reportedly excited about uniting the studios behind Spider-Man and Mission Impossible. Awesome. We know Tom Cruise does his own stunts, so if he plays Spider-Man, he will get himself bitten by a radioactive spider, and he will go to high school. Of course, at this point, the negotiations have started, right? So nobody knows what's going to happen, but just in case, I have a message for my potential new bosses at Sony Pictures Entertainment. Hello, beloved new parent company. I know that acquiring a new media asset means making some tough decisions. And with that in mind, let me just say that I, Stephen Colbert, loved Madam Web. I thought it was great. I was so excited. I was thrilled. I enjoyed that she was a madam, but also web. I cannot wait to have a long and fruitful partnership with the people who decided to make Madam Web, a movie about Spider-Man's uncle's coworker. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to listen to some quality music on the go, thanks to my Sony Walkman. There you go. Oh. It's my favorite song. I love Sony, I love Sony, I love Sony, Sony. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Ethan Hawke.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well... that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
Folks, my first guest is an actor, writer, and director you know from Reality Bites, Boyhood, and Leave the World Behind. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Ethan Hawke. Nice to see you again.
This is fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I want to get to Wildcat, because we talked a little bit backstage. I'm a huge fan of Flannery O'Connor and you and your daughter Maya, who plays Flannery mm-hmm. in this movie. But I got to ask you about this right here. People are very excited that you made a cameo in Taylor Swift's newest video.
Yeah, that is
right
not,
there.
Yeah.
We got you, Taylor, Josh Charles, uh-huh. and Post Malone. How did that come about?
Well, Stephen, I'm very popular, you know? I mean, I
forgot. People, I keep forgetting.
People seek me out. You know, it just happens. No, I have to tell you. So Josh Charles and I were in Dead Poets Society together. We've been friends for our life. And,
there you go.
Oh, there we are.
There you go. The Dead Poets
Society. Well, unfortunately, we don't look like that anymore. We got this call. Taylor's releasing an album, The Tortured Poets Department.
Yeah.
And I think she wanted to hide a little Easter egg about Dead Poets Society.
Right. So well, there's a reference there.
Yeah.
There's a reference there.
You can't imagine what it's like to walk through an airport with a friend that you've known for 35 years that you grew up with and watch all the young people in the airport with their Eras sweatshirts on and their Taylor Swift things. And we got something on them. We're going to meet the queen ourselves, right? And it, for Josh and I, we laughed ourselves silly the whole day. We felt like the biggest rock stars in the world. And Josh is different than me. I tried to low-key it. And Josh, we got to Taylor's camp. He's like, hey, you guys got any sushi? Oh, let's get some sushi in here right now. We had the best sushi I ever had in my life, you know?
Wow.
It was fun.
Now, you've got two teenage daughters. Did you get to say, hey, I'm going to go do this?
No, I signed an NDA. I could not. You tell my teenage daughters that I'm going to meet Taylor and everybody at school is going to know. And then
it wouldn't be fair to them. There's no way they could keep a lid on.
And I'll tell you, the truth is, when they did find out, the look on their face was one of profound disappointment. Like, they want to pay attention to my dad. My dad's an idiot. You should be calling me.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I've been there.
You have? Yeah. So they're just, Taylor belongs to them. You know? I can't have that on them. So I had to low-key it.
You've now directed this film called Wildcat, which is also the name of a short story by Flannery O'Connor. Before we get into the film, what was your introduction to Flannery O'Connor? Because for me, it was because she was my mother's favorite author. Oh, really? Your mom's favorite author?
Yeah.
I read it to try to understand my mom a little bit. So we had something to talk about.
Well, my mother was selling college textbooks in Atlanta, Georgia. She's from Fort Worth, Texas. And Flannery meant a lot to her. And she used to give her short stories to me, I think trying to provoke the inner feminist in me. You know, I was 14, 15, reading Kerouac and Hemingway and all those usual knuckleheads. And,
right. She's trying to get you to read something good.
Trying to get me to read something good. You might want to listen to a woman for once in your life, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what was, yeah. Thank you, Mom. But so you can't imagine, I'm really interested in your experience with your mother, but you can't imagine what it was like years after that experience with my mom to have my 17, 18-year-old daughter come to me and say, have you ever read Flannery O'Connor? Mm. And I was like, yeah, I have. So, well, what does this story mean? Did you read this one? What does it mean? And so I was like, I'd go back and reread that one. And it gave Maya and I a meeting place. Because Flannery asks a lot of profound questions, very serious questions that she doesn't answer.
Just being a human being, what the experience is like to be with other human beings in the light of...
And how
in the light of the grace of the Holy Spirit.
That is what she writes about. She's a very devout woman who took her faith to a very profound place. She was met with the truth of mortality at a young age. Maya was 24 when she was playing the part, so we focused the film on that area. She was diagnosed with lupus at 24, which had killed her father very quickly. So she wasn't sure whether she was going to see the next Christmas, the whole of the rest, she lived 15 years. But it took her to the deep end of the pool as far as asking serious questions about why we're here and what is love and what is grace and what is the point and what is this society that we live in that is full of so much hypocrisy. And she asks questions that make you deeply uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Why do really bad people often succeed? Mm-hmm. Why do really good people are ignored? All these...
There's also one of the things... I mentioned this to you backstage. One of the things I really like about the complexity of the characters that she writes, or her view of the characters, even the characters are presented in a simple way, is that there aren't really heroes. There isn't a hero of the story.
There's just
another human.
And, you know, as a reader, it's very disappointing. It's frustrating. We want to see heroes. Who is the good guy? Can I be the good guy? Who am I supposed to relate to? Because we all want to relate to the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she never gives that to you. Mm-hmm. She never makes it easy in any moral situation, in any, whether it's family, society, she always makes you so uncomfortable. A very pious person will be fake. Mm-hmm. A debauched alcoholic will say something profound. You're never sure what you're looking
at. The seemingly simple character might actually have the answer without even necessarily knowing it. It's hard to talk about her stories without giving things away because there are surprising denouements to these stories that can absolutely grab you by the heart, if not by the scruff of the neck, and just absolutely rattle you in the last half page of her stories.
I found that's where Maya and I met talking about it, because you'll finish one of her stories. I highly recommend them. And you almost feel so upset. You have the feeling that I don't like that story. I don't like that story.
Everything that rises must converge.
It's so upsetting.
I don't think I've cried harder in my life than the last half page of Everything That Rises Must Converge.
No, it's brutal. But it leaves you this other feeling, which is that you want to read it again. I'm upset, but wait, what did it mean? Why did she say it that way? And why... Oh, I could talk about Everything Rises Must Converge, but it would... Let's sit down. Let's order a meal. Because it would... But that was the fun of working on a movie with my daughter, who she brought this project to me. This was her passion that was my mother's passion. Mm. So I'm having a cross-generational conversation, you know, and it feels...
You're a son and you're a father. You are just a little man.
And that I'm an American. And as an American, Flannery holds us to tasks and forces us to look at a lot of things that we're really uncomfortable with. And so looking at the past is difficult. You know, now that 70 years have gone by or so since she was writing, a lot of it is extremely difficult to look at and extremely valuable to look at. I found the whole process of making the movie enlightening.
We have to take a quick break, but stick around. Right back with more Ethan Hawke, everybody. Hey, everybody, we're back with the director of Wildcat, a new film about Flannery O'Connor, Ethan Hawke. Ethan, had you directed your daughter before?
No, she acted with me in The Good Lord Bird, which is a show about John Brown, but I'd never directed her.
And what was that like? Did she take your direction well? Or did she...
Did
she take it like a daughter?
Here's the funny thing about our family. I have this expression, you know, families have fault lines. There's certain subjects you just cannot bring up. If Thanksgiving, if you bring up that Tuesday and what grandma said about that, just the whole table will explode. You cannot bring that up. And there's certain conversations you can have. You know, if I want to have a good time with my family, I bring up the Dallas Cowboys. We'll have a nice time. You know, for Maya and I, our safe place is art. That's where this young woman is so... what are we doing here?
This is a picture of you directing her.
Oh, let's see that. She's a great musician. She's a formidable performer. She's an amazing person to be with and talk about art and to make art with. She's challenging in every respect. And she's a force. And I love... And I was so grateful. My wife is my producing partner. We have this little mom and pop production company, and she brought this idea to us and said, you know, would you guys make this movie? And it felt like an honor and a huge challenge.
There are a lot of challenging moments in Flannery O'Connor stories between parents and their children. That happens continually. That's lovely. It was a lovely experience for you.
It was great.
We have a clip of... All right. Of Maya's Flannery here. What do we need to know? I believe they're at a...
Oh, I don't know. This movie's so complex. I'm scared to show the clip. It's like, Flannery O'Connor was a very devout young woman. And for a period of her life, she was at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, which is one of the most stunning... Yes, yes, let's hear it for Iowa. They gave... The writers that came out of this program, Wikipedia, it'll blow you away. They changed the way we think, this community of people. But she was there... And she was a woman of faith with a lot of people that were not. And it was very challenging for her in this scene, kind of setting that up. Yeah.
Now, I don't know the answer, but I do remember as a child, when I would stand in line to receive the host, I always thought of it as the Holy Ghost.
Beautiful.
You seem like the most portable person of the Trinity. Now, I think of the Eucharist as a lovely, expressive symbol. The synecdoche of God.
If it's a symbol, then to hell with it. It's a lot harder to believe than not to believe. What people don't understand is how much religion costs. They think that faith is a big electric blanket, when really it's the cross.
Thank you for making this movie.
God bless you.
Wildcat is in theaters now. Ethan Hawke, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.